In other news.
To determine why and how the towers collapsed.
Kind of scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. We get a deeper insight into the gang stalking operations designed to harass and slowly deteriorate and psychologically destroy individuals. We also get finer detail on the perpetrators and their victims, or TIs, targeted individuals. This topic is revisited on this show because of its complexity and because many mainstream sources, such as the New York Times, while forced to report on the topic, have dismissed victims of gang stalking as delusional. Our guest, June T.I., author of the book No Ordinary Stalking, A Look at Organized Stalking and Electronic Harassment, has not only been stalked and experienced that bizarre reality, but she's volunteered her time to help other victims. June has compiled data from hundreds of cases, and what emerges from her research is startling. The predators are sadistic. The stalker's goal is total incapacitation of their human prey. Important truths emerge as we learn what kind of people devote large amounts of time and resource toward ruining the lives of ordinary people. June T.I. is a mental health crisis counselor educated in British Columbia, Canada. With 35 years of experience in various mental health fields, she's owned and operated a therapeutic writing school for people with brain injuries. June also counsels, supports, and assists victims of organized stalking free of charge through the West Coast Society for All Victims of Organized Stalking and Electronic Harassment. June, welcome to Another News.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for inviting me. Glad and thrilled to be here.
June, your book titled No Ordinary Stalking, A Look at Organized Stalking and Electronic Harassment, is an important and highly itemized resource for those wanting to learn about the topic. You also include your own gang stalking experiences in this book. Would you please give listeners some background about your case and also your volunteer work providing support for victims of this criminal activity?
Oh, absolutely, Jeff. That is a good question. Alrighty. My stalking, organized stalking, began in January of 1998, and it was on a Saturday afternoon. I'm a mental health crisis counselor, and I was asked to attend a fellow in crises. But he turned out to be not in crises at all. I've been in this field long enough to realize that he was not there to get any help. Now, I had either been chosen as a victim at that point, and he was checking me over, or the other possibility is that he was just seeking a new victim at random. I have no way of knowing why I was chosen for this crime, but that's how it went down on that Saturday. By Sunday, about 24 hours later, he was calling my home repetitively, and the house, farm, family, vehicles, the livestock, everything had been taken over by a gang of strangers, and those are the organized stalkers. We didn't know why that they had taken over our place. And when I say that, I mean that they were driving up and down and up and down. Now, you have to realize that I lived in the woods on a gravel road. We had no neighbors. It was just a lovely place in the wilds. We were very happy there. So to see vehicles up and down and up and down was extremely unusual. Plus, it was all men who were stalking and terrorizing us, I suppose. They were trespassing. They were, I guess it must have been sledgehammers at night. They were bringing our gates down. They were bringing the fences down. They were harming the livestock, vandalizing the vehicles, spray painted the house, nonstop phone calls, just literally took over the place. And that is actually how my victimization began. And I want to say that is unusual. It's very unusual. I have spoken to many hundreds of victims by now, of course, and the majority of the victims say that their stalking and harassment began slowly. Slowly enough that they didn't really realize what was going on and thought that they were going through a long period of extremely bad luck. Bad luck in that having a lot of problems with their vehicles, maybe problems at work, just everything breaking, people saying rather bizarre things, until they finally caught on that they were a victim of organized stalking. So it's rather rare to be taken over within 24 hours, but that is what happened in my situation. As far as the volunteer work goes, well, I am a mental health counselor, so it just seemed appropriate, actually it seemed ethically correct, to start helping other victims. So I started beginning to assist victims in 2002 and it's just been going on from there. In 2015, I registered a support society with the government for the victims of organized stalking and electronic harassment. And that has made a bit of a difference. So we've got a bit more leeway. I get more support for myself and for this registered society. So having a registered society was a rather good thing to do.
Now, if you would, please sketch out the profile of a gang stalking target based on your research.
Oh, another really good question, Jeff. Yes, well, a gang stalking target is you. It's me. It is your relatives. It can be absolutely anybody who can be targeted for this crime. Well, almost anybody. The majority of the victims of organized stalking, and the vast majority, are lovely people. They are the nicest people you would ever want to know. They are people you would leave in your home and not think twice about. They are the kind of people who are in a lineup and they'll see maybe an elderly person or just anybody perhaps drop their umbrella and they'll be the person who picks it up. They'll be the person who gives someone a hand. So for some reason, it appears to me really nice, lovely people, generous in spirit, good people seem to be chosen first or at least most. And that, now I can't prove that, of course, but after having worked with and supported so many victims, I can hardly think of any, maybe just two or three actually, that I found difficult. The rest of them, despite the despair, despite the problems they're going through, these are such lovely people. They're asking what they can do to help, you know, my society and me, and they will be in dire straits themselves. These are the kind of people that often get chosen for organized stalking. They could be absolutely anybody. And about, I'm finding in my records, about 60% are female. And I don't say necessarily women because you'll get girls as well. And so a lot of the statistics will go up to 70% of females being targeted. For me, it's about 60%. I don't know why there is that discrepancy. Any culture, any religion, any status as far as financial status or education status, to be absolutely anybody. But as I said, the majority of victims are really, really nice people.
June, listeners might think that some gang stalking targets are whistleblowers or people who had worked in a high-level position at a corporation. The fact that it's ordinary people, it makes it difficult for people who don't know about this to believe.
Yeah, I agree completely. And you put that really well. I agree completely. It is true that whistleblowers, people that have caused maybe a bit of a ruckus in the, I mean, both will use a community council meeting, perhaps. Maybe someone stands up and says, well, I don't think that this park should be developed. I want to see this remain a park, and I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that this property stays as parkland. Now, that person is more likely to be targeted. No question about it. Same with whistleblowers and people that do have sensitive information. I don't think that they hold, they're not the majority of victims, but there's certainly enough of them for me to realize that people that go against the grain are causing a bit of a problem, perhaps for corporations or, well, for the community or community leaders. Those people can definitely get targeted quite quickly, actually, and they will get targeted hard. Their lives will be turned upside down, to make them keep them quiet or to stop them from doing whatever they're doing is causing a ruckus. The majority are, as far as I can see, randomly picked, and it is hard to believe. It's extremely hard to believe that a lovely person would be chosen to have his or her life completely destroyed for no apparent reason. It's very hard to believe that. So victims are not believed, the ones that are just picked randomly. They are not believed by police or their families, but or friends, by anybody, really, because it appears that they are delusional, that they're all of a sudden imagining that people are stalking them and harassing them and saying strange things and the strange phone calls. And why would someone want to ruin this good person's life? I think that's in part why this crime is incredibly successful, because the people that are chosen, the majority of the people who are chosen for this crime, have done absolutely nothing wrong to attract this kind of attention, never mind the hate that they're getting. And don't forget that the harassment is surreptitious, in that it's very difficult for people to witness who are around the victim. And it's very hard to prove. I'll use an example. Well, I'll use some of my own examples. If I was to tell you that I was getting a lot of calls, apparently wrong numbers, for people looking for cemeteries or funeral homes. Now, that doesn't seem terribly suspicious, but I would be getting perhaps, or I was getting a lot of them. Now, at the same time, I'm getting people at the door, and they might be looking for the same sort of information or saying, oh, I'm so sorry, I've got the wrong house number, I'm all upset, my niece just got killed. So that could be a theme, a running theme of a particular victim. So a victim will say, I'm getting all these weird calls and people at the door and people in town talking about, you know, funeral homes and cemeteries and people getting killed. Well, that doesn't sound like that big of a deal, actually, but the victim will be getting a lot of it and a lot of other kinds of harassment as well. So that sort of harassment is very hard to prove, you know, as being harassment. But the problem is the victim could be getting, we'll say, 20 different kinds of harassment. That's just one example, with the phones and the people at the door and people saying strange things in town. The other harassments could be you can't keep your vehicle safe. Another one, you feel that someone's been in your house and has rearranged things. It could be slander at your workplace, and you're not really understanding what you did wrong to perpetrate all these lies. But there'll be lies that will be circulating about you, and quite significant lies, so your job will be at stake. Strange emails, very strange emails, strange things happening to your computer and your telephone. So when a victim has, we'll say, 20 different kinds of harassment going on, you know, every day, you can put up with one kind of harassment and ignore that. But at 20, the victim is always combating a problem, going from one problem to the next, and trying to solve them, and they're nonstop. So the victim has to put all his or her time into solving all these problems, and some of them are critical, such as saving your job, having problems with your bank account because of all the hacking. There's just nonstop problems, and but it does look like a lot of bad luck to people who are just looking on. So when the victim says, well, I'm sure people are following me and stalking me, or the same cars are going back and forth and back and forth, or they won't stop honking outside my house, or they're parking outside my house, those things just sound like everyday occurrences. But the problem with the victim, and they are everyday occurrences, But the problem with the victim is that he could have, he or she could have, you know, 20, 30, 40 people doing the same thing. So it, at that point, it becomes quite serious harassment. So that's about the, that's what organized stalking more or less looks like, I suppose.
It would certainly unravel some of the toughest people. If you would, give listeners a profile of the perpetrators. Do they get paid? Why don't the police arrest more of these people? This is based on your research, because I think you've compiled a lot of very important data.
Absolutely, yes, and I have been organizing my data. I've been keeping records for a long time, and I think they're important records. The stalkers or the perpetrators of this crime, again, they look like I do, and they look like you do, Jeff. They look like anybody. They can come from all walks of life, just like the victims. I cannot prove what I'm saying here. It is just from my observations over the last 21 years, and of course, from having run a support society since 2002. I've been speaking to victims all over the world, but I'm in Canada, but particularly in Canada, and just as many in the U.S. The stalkers or the perpetrators, I believe that some of them are full-time, because myself and the other victims talk about being stalked full-time by the same faces, the same people. Now, as far as I'm concerned, now I cannot prove this, but they must be getting paid, because everybody has to make a living, bring in money somehow, and these people would not be following, tracking, harassing their targeted individual every single day as a hobby. So they have to be getting paid. Now, there's certainly that group. The majority of the stalkers and the harassers appear to be volunteers, or they could be getting paid, you know, minimally. Apparently, they get paid in gift cards. There's been conversations with actually perpetrators that have not really realized what they were got themselves into, and said that they had been paid in gift cards to follow someone or to harass someone. The majority of these people that are doing the stalking and harassing, they do it perhaps for fun. They do it some of the time. A lot of them, I think, feel that they are making the community a safer place, because a lot of lies are told about the victim. It's the only way you can get someone to stalk and harass them, actually. We'll use a gentleman victim. Perhaps he has been slandered and called a pedophile. So that lie will go around. And groups, including Citizens on Patrol, which are the volunteers under the police, will be asked to keep an eye on this fellow. You know, just keep an eye on him. Make sure he's behaving. Let him know that he's being watched so that he cannot harm any more children. So the people that are stalking and harassing the victim think that they're doing a good turn. And, of course, they're really going to dislike this fellow, because they don't like pedophiles. They're going to actually have a lot of hate towards him, especially if they have small children. So their harassment and their stalking is going to be quite serious. It's going to cause a lot of problems for this victimized fellow who has done absolutely nothing wrong. So that, I think, in my opinion, the majority of the stalkers and the perpetrators, I don't think they know what they've got themselves into. I don't think they understand what organized stalking is. They do not realize that perhaps 30 or 40 other people have been told the same lie and are also harassing that victim. And the point of doing it all, of course, is to destroy completely that victim's life. So the slander could of course, just ruin the victim's career or job. So the victim will become unemployed. And with the harassment and the stalking comes the vandalism, a lot of hacking, problems with your phone and your computer, just all sorts of problems, and tampering with the vehicles. It's a very expensive crime for a victim. The victim spends an incredible amount of time fixing things or trying to secure things, you know, buying cameras and all sorts of security measures, but very expensive to be a victim of this crime. And so eventually, or sometimes fairly, in my case, fairly quickly, the victim can be completely overwhelmed with harassment and problems and spending all the money and not being able to keep a job going and be completely broke, and the life will definitely change. There's a lot of fear, complete fear, because you don't know why this is happening. You didn't do anything wrong. All your money is going out the window trying to, you know, live with this crime and stop this crime. And no one will help you because it's very difficult to prove. So the point of this crime is to destroy every aspect of the victim's life. So because of the slander, the victim will lose a friend, perhaps a job. The job goes, the housing. This goes on and on until the victim has absolutely nothing, just nothing left. No job, no home. Even the pets will go, no friends, the family eventually abandoned. This is what usually happens. The family will abandon the victim because the victim starts acting a little strangely. The victim is not acting strangely for the situation because the victim has to try to stop this crime and take all sorts of measures that will probably look unusual to other people because the other people cannot actually see all of the harassment and all of the problems that are going on. So the crime is, you know, designed to completely destroy somebody's life, and it's very successful. It is very successful in doing that. And that's where I come in, is to offer some support. Usually people do not get a hold of me until they have pretty well lost everything or very close to it. And, of course, at that point, they realize what they have become a victim of, and they would like to know how to stop it. Well, I can't really stop it. You just have to learn how to thwart some of it, adapt to it as best you can, and life can get better. But stopping it completely is it's happened, but it's extremely difficult.
Thank you for elaborating on this, June. You mentioned some of the victims buying surveillance cameras. Having talked with many victims of gang stalking, has any evidence, video evidence, been produced of surveillance footage of gang stalkers maybe creeping around someone's property?
Oh, sure. There's a lot of that, an awful lot of that. But it's awfully difficult to prove that a lot of the time that these are your organized stalkers. Anybody can get lost, or it seems to be very difficult to prove. Organized stalkers don't generally creep around people's property. They did on mine. They certainly did on mine, but I didn't have any neighbors. That may have been part of it. What they will often do, and this is one of their favorite tactics, is they will stand in front of a window of your house, and you'll think, oh, my gosh, what is that man doing standing right in my window? Well, of course, the man will, the stalker will have an excuse. Say, oh, geez, you know, I was confused, or I'm waiting for a tow truck down the street. And they'll always have an excuse ready. So if you phone the police and say, well, there's a man, he's standing right in front of my window, and the fellow actually will have a vehicle that looks like it, you know, needs to be towed or that it's broken down. Now, that certainly can't happen. I think it's rather unusual that a stranger would stand in front of your window, but that, I guess, could happen. But it shouldn't happen all the time. That's just too strange. But it's still, if you call the police and you say, well, there's a man standing in front of my window, he says he's just waiting for a tow truck, the police aren't going to do anything because that sort of thing can happen. It doesn't look very suspicious at all.
Okay.
So this is how they get around it. So we have a lot of, when I say we, I'm talking about victims, we have a lot of video footage of our stalkers, but it's very difficult to make them look or to have them look on a video as the people that they really are, as harassing you and stalking you, because the crime is very crafty, very crafty. It usually makes the victim look delusional or crazy or being a little, you know, paranoid or perhaps just a little too overcautious. It's usually the victim that ends up being called in the wrong, not the perpetrator or the stalker. That is usually the case.
Now, one of the key damaging tactics you mentioned used by organized stalkers is to gossip, slander, and spread lies about the target to their employer, their landlord, family, neighbors, and friends. What advice do you give out to potential employers, landlords, and family members and friends of a target that might be on the receiving end of this covert slander?
Well, that's another good question. Unfortunately, the majority of the time when a family member or a boss, a friend, hears the slander, it just startles me how often the slander is believed, even by people who love the target. It could be a parent, it could be a boss of many years, and it just amazes me how often the slander is believed, even though the person that's being slandered is an upstanding person. But, of course, that is not the case every time. It's certainly common. But oftentimes, the person who is hearing the slander will go to the victim and say, well, this is what I heard, and I know it's not true. And, you know, and then it is just completely ignored, and it just doesn't go anywhere from there. But it's unfortunate that the slander is often heeded, quite commonly, without a lot of thought put into it. And I don't understand why people would buy into the slander so quickly, but they do. But don't forget, the stalkers, the perpetrators, when they slander someone, they will often do so with what looks like official documentation that shows, like proves, you know, but of course it's all false documentation that proves that the person is a drug addict or is a pedophile or has done some other crime or is just, you know, a bad member of the community. And the stalkers will come up with what looks like official documentation. And if someone's not thinking on their feet, it may be fairly easy for them to look at that and say, oh, my goodness, that looks official. So, you know, Jane Doe must have done this terrible thing or she must be a drug addict because I see the paperwork right here. That could be part of it as well. People just don't question themselves or the people that are presenting the false evidence or the slander. They're not questioned enough. I think it's just life. We like to try to believe people who are talking to us and are trying to give us information apparently with the best of intentions, when, of course, the intentions are not good at all. Yeah, quite often the slander is believed by loved ones, by friends, by employees, by pretty well everyone. And that's very unfortunate because that begins the downslide of the victim losing, you know, a job or friends or just starts the whole snowball effect. With the slander, it can be two or three or more people that are spreading the slander. It could, you know, at the job or to the landlord. So when you've got multiple people bad-mouthing a tenant or an employee, it has a lot more impact than just one person because everybody is saying something terrible about the victim. So that might be harder for, like you say, a boss, a landlord to ignore because, you know, the person is being bombarded with, oh, my goodness, you don't want this person as a tenant or you don't want this person as an employee. We'll be hearing it from multiple people because, of course, this is organized gang stalking. You've got a whole gang working together. Mm-hmm. Well, that is a factor as well. I should have added that.
I'm glad you did because it makes me think even more now that the landlord, employer, family member would then say, well, who are you exactly, and why do you care so much?
Yes. Yes, unfortunately, most people don't ask those questions. They just don't. Maybe they're rather surprised, but it seems to be the majority of the time the slander is believed.
June, I'm glad we took that apart a little bit more, and because that's a very damaging tactic. There are a number of ways in reacting to non-lethal gang stalking. Ignore it, objectify it, but paying attention to every detail and internalizing it will certainly help a moderately sane person seem unstable in a few months. Do you hear about cases where the targeted individual ignores and objectifies stalkers to the point the perpetrators give up?
No. You know, I've heard of a couple of cases, but I have never been able to research them. So, and I'm talking about, I've spoken to many hundreds of targeted individuals by now, and I've only heard of a couple. And they have been in emails, and they have said that the crime has stopped. So I can't really comment because I need to speak to these people in person, and I've tried to be able to do that, but have not been able to connect with them. So it gets worse before it gets better. And I hate to give bad news to anybody, but it gets worse before it gets better. Ignoring the crimes that cannot hurt you if you were a victim is absolutely the best thing to do. If somebody is following you around, well, just ignore it. If someone's saying strange things to you in town, if someone in town, well, as an example, someone will tell you what you said on the phone earlier in the morning because, of course, your phone is tapped into. So those sort of things are not going to hurt you. They're going to unsettle you. You're certainly going to be unhappy about it, but they're not actually going to hurt you. So ignoring those tactics is about the best thing you could possibly do, because the more fear you show over a specific tactic, the more you're going to get of it, because obviously that tactic is working and working well. So if a targeted individual is approached in town with a statement saying, it's a covert statement, saying in a roundabout way, "We know what you did this morning," or "We know what you did yesterday." Now, if the victim gets all upset and is jumping up and down and, you know, just closing his blinds and just, you know, really upset and telling everyone what happened, that victim is going to get more and more and more of that kind of a tactic, because that tactic is working well. As much as he or she can, ignore all the kinds of harassment that will not cause him or her harm. The things that will cause harm, you do really need to pay attention to. One of the harassments is trying to run you off the road when you're driving. Now, certainly can't ignore that. Another tactic will be pretending they're going to run you over when you're a pedestrian. Fortunately, they can come so close that they will actually touch you. I have been hit just on my elbow and my coat by that tactic. So those sort of tactics, you don't want to ignore that. You could get killed. But the other reason is that a victim is completely overwhelmed with harassment, and they're supposed to be. That is the intention, so that the victim is going from problem to problem to problem and spending all his or her money, and things are, jobs are being lost, that sort of thing. The victim is so overwhelmed by all the harassment that it's very hard to function. And the mind can only grapple with so many problems at the same time. So ignoring as many of the harassments as possible puts the victim in a much better psychological state to be able to fight back, to be able to look after him or herself, just to actually have some semblance of life, to be able to do a few normal things, if they're able to ignore as much of the harassment as is possible. Because victims, and justly so, psychologically fall apart. It's exhausting. It's absolutely exhausting to cope with all this harassment. We've all heard about the bullying in schools, and when it's nonstop, the kids that are being bullied are completely overwhelmed. They can't do their schoolwork. They just can't function. So a victim, in the same sense, has to ignore as much as he or she possibly can, that is safe to ignore, and will have a better life for it also, and be able to put more energy, more mental energy, more intelligence into combating the crimes that really are, you know, deadly. That is what I normally try to suggest to victims to do. It's very difficult to ignore a lot of the harassment. Everyone has a different personality. Some people have that bulldog kind of personality where they will not let someone get away with the harassment. So if a person is stalking, a person with a bulldog personality, the victim will always turn around and shout and yell and say, stop stalking me, and really get worked up. And that, you know, it's just their personality. And that's fine. That's just the way they shouldn't be getting stalked. They have every right to say, stop doing this to me. But because it is a 24/7 crime that's meant to completely disable that victim, I always suggest if you can, just ignore it. You will be better off for it, and you will be harassed perhaps a bit less. The crimes will increase when you're trying to ignore them. They will put everything they've got into making life worse for you so that you won't be able to ignore them. And once they figure out that they're just not going to get a rise out of the victim with quite a few of the harassments, they'll tone them down. Because what's the point of putting all this effort into harassing someone by knocking on their door constantly or phoning them constantly if the victim just doesn't care? So it's just there's no point in it for the perpetrators to do that. But they'll give it their all for a little while, and then they'll start backing off with some of the harassments that are not working. Now, that doesn't mean that the target's life is going to be a lot better. It could be. It very well could be. But in some cases, they'll come up with new harassments that actually will be much harder to ignore. Everybody's case is a little bit different. Some people that ignore the harassment end up, they're still harassed, they're still stalked, they still have the full scheme of terrible things happening to them. But the harassment, it backs off a bit because they're just not reacting. Mm-hmm. But the other victims, they will get full bore harassment, even when they're trying to ignore it as much as they can. That for their case, the perpetrators are determined to bring them down, so the harassment will up, and they will get new kinds of harassment that you just can't ignore them because it would be so horrendous or expensive.
In a related question here, what are your thoughts in response to token psychiatrists or sociologists in mainstream media articles or documentaries about gang stalking, diagnosing most victims' experiences as fabrications of mental illness?
Yes, that's very, very common. This is just my opinion, and of course I work in mental health. I believe that the majority of the people that work in the health field and the medical field do not know about this crime. I blame them for not knowing about this crime. I don't think they are necessarily trying to cause the victim harm by calling them delusional. I think that they're not taking the time to listen to the victim. And when the victim says, all you have to do is spend 5 minutes and look this up on the internet, this is an actual crime, I'm not crazy, normally the doctor or the nurse or whoever is in attendance doesn't look it up, of course. They're very busy. And the victim gets the delusional label. That is very common. So I do blame the health and the medical people for not taking the time to look this up. I don't think that their intentions are evil. I just think they're not using the common sense enough, in my opinion. And they do need to be looking this up, because there's so many victims coming forward. Now, victims do have their doctors phone me every so often, and I'm very, very glad that they do, because I'm able to tell them, well, this is a genuine crime. And the doctors are generally very surprised. They had not heard of it. A lot of the time they're willing to look it up. They often believe me because I'm in the health field, but they're not believing their patient. It's much easier, I think, and certainly much quicker to decide that the person is delusional. Now, if the person is a psychiatrist, of course, the psychiatrist does treat people who are sincerely delusional, and they will just come to that conclusion rather naturally and not take into account what the victim is actually saying them to them or will not look up the information. But, yeah, it ruins a victim's life to have a diagnosis of delusional or paranoid, all sorts of different diagnoses that victim can get, and all very unfairly because the victim is a crime victim. There's nothing wrong with the victim's brain or head or thinking other than the fact that the victim will be very, very anxious, of course, but there's nothing wrong with the victim at all, and then they'll be put into psych drugs and, oh, just terrible things, or even in the psych ward. And all they are is a crime victim. And that's pretty darn common. That further destroys, of course, the targeted individual's life. It's just one more rung down the ladder to the bottom as to have a doctor decide that you are delusional. That's just another further step to the bottom of losing everything.
The U.S. Embassy employees in China and Cuba were complaining of brain injuries and other symptoms consistent with microwave attacks. There was confirmation from doctors at the University of Miami recently reported in the New York Times about the Cuban embassy's American government employees. Doctors stated their condition is real, not the result of mass hysteria, a response to intense news media coverage, or a stress reaction to being evacuated, as doctors in Cuba had suggested. What are your thoughts about the developments in these cases?
Well, I happen to agree that the diplomats and the personnel and the families that were affected by directed energy, well, there's no proof, but it appears to be that it's microwaving. I believe that is the case. Victims of organized stalking are generally affected also by energy, by noxious energy. Now, we can't prove this because it's the same situation as what happened at at the embassy in Cuba. All the scientists and the medical people, they have not got answers either. They don't know how it was done. Who has done it? Well, the victims of organized stalking have the same, I'm going to say exact, problem with the energy affecting them in the same ways as the diplomats. Now, of course, we as victims, we can't figure out who's doing it, or we can't prove the energy or even why it's being done. Same as with the personnel in the embassy. But the effects on our brains and our bodies are the same. Now, right now, I am working with a victim of organized stalking and electronic harassment in Virginia. And she has got all the scans and all the medical records, and her case is rather a mystery to her doctors, as is the diplomats. So what I'm trying to do, the Virginia victim and I are trying to have her case, her medical case, taken up with the doctors who examined the people from the embassy who had the same effects as the Virginia victim. And that would be, I think, set a precedent so that it would show that, prove that victims of organized stalking, electronic harassment are getting hit with the same mysterious energy. We believe it's microwaves that are causing identical problems to the people from the embassies. So I think it's the same energy. I cannot prove it, but I believe the same energy, whatever it is hitting victims of electronic harassment and organized stalking in the same way it's hit the embassies. I'm quite sure of it, and so are the other victims of this crime as well.
Josephine Grace, a past guest who spoke about her gang stalking case and people in invisible suits on her property that Robert Guffey, the author of Camellio, had spoke about. There are patents on this technology that the military is using. She relayed a powerful story about the spiritual consequences involved when the breach of human free will occurs by torturing people remotely with microwave attacks and electronic weapons. We're going to hear part of that interview with Josephine Grace.
I have been interrogated so many times under brain-computer interface, which has a patent, which if you look on MIT journal sites and other scientific sites, you'll see that there are many BCI or brain-computer interface machines out there where machines read the thoughts of people and then they inject by typing into a computer thoughts into a person's head. But to do this, to be brain-computer interface, they put the frequencies up really high. I think it's 400 hertz, but I'm not sure. And they, like Dr. Valerie Hunt said, and I was very glad to read this in her book after it happened to me, they talk about the fact that beings can speak through you. Well, okay, so they had interrogated me repeatedly. After one horrendous interrogation where, you know, you're just this witness, you're witnessing the conversation going on between different subconscious levels of you, like your 4-year-old, your 10-year-old, your 20-year-old, which psychiatrists will tell you you can also access with just regular hypnosis. So I'm here as a witness, and I'm listening to the people interrogating me remotely, accessing my brain through frequencies in a neighbor's home. I know the neighbors who are doing this. And all of a sudden, it's like nothing is there, like there's just space, just all of a sudden. And the people who are interrogating me were like, "Who are you? Who are you?" And a voice spoke, and it was a man. It was a male, and the male was laughing. And he said, "I am here from God." He said, "You are doomed." And he was addressing the people experimenting on me involuntarily. I am a human subject in the covert program today to use humans without having to pay for their experimentation. Basically, the voice of this angel said, and this is a quote, and I'll never forget it as long as I live, because as a person who can see spirits, I've been around all these people my whole life who say, God is all forgiving, God is all kind, God is all loving. But this angel said something totally different to the gang stalkers out there. They're called gang stalkers, and to these experimenters. The angel said, God has turned God's face away from you. God will show you no compassion or mercy upon your death. You will be cast into hell for eternity for taking free will away from humankind. Free will is God's greatest gift to humanity. And then again, the angel said, you are doomed. So my mouth, if I had the ability to move my mouth at the time, because they use what is called a Mu wave, M-U, it causes the body to be unable to respond to the brain. The muscles do not, you know, when you're in this wave, it's like theta or alpha or beta wave. It's a Mu wave, and it's like you're almost paralyzed in a way. But so if my mouth could have hung open, it would, because I was under the impression God forgives everybody. But evidently, taking free will away from humans is a worse sin than murdering them, because with murder, many religions all over the planet believe you can work your way out of hell eventually or with other crimes. But the angel said God would cast them into hell for eternity. So I wanted all the people out there working in this covert project that is funded by many governments all over the world to know that they've crossed some line. God has made some line in the universe, and they're never going to be able to reincarnate. They're never going to be able to live any other way but in hell for eternity after this lifetime of theirs is over, no matter what species they are.
Hey, that was Josephine Grace speaking about her experiences. Very powerful stuff. June, what are your thoughts on the breach of human free will?
Well, we retain our essence. We retain our spark. We're the same people, but we are being somewhat, I hate to use the word controlled, but it seems like we are being controlled in that we cannot stop the electronic energy from hurting us, from impacting our brains, such as it has done in the embassies. It's our brains that are under attack as far as the electronic harassment goes. I cannot think of a greater or a bigger injustice than that. I'm absolutely horrified. And every victim of this crime is. To think that a criminal sect, just like with the embassies, we don't know who it is. We can't prove who is doing this to us. But for someone to impact your brain with an energy, perhaps microwaves, it can, of course, cause you a lot of damage to your brain so that you don't think as well. Your memory is impaired. Your hearing is impaired, even your vision. And it causes all sorts of other problems to a body, to the nervous system, as well as to a brain. So that, you know, it's not necessarily just always free will. We're like a mouse in a corner, actually. We're just sort of fighting for our lives in the corner here, and there's something very large that is attacking us and can't seem to get a handle on it. But when they take over a brain, that, to a degree, is taking over, I guess, free will. Though I hate to say that, because that is rather detrimental to the victims. We all fight back. We all, you know, think our own thoughts as much as we can. Electronic harassment does influence thinking, not only by causing injuries, but there are frequencies that will influence someone's mood. So a frequency that can be emitted through electronic harassment will cause a victim to be extremely sad. Now, the victim may have been actually having not bad of a day, might have even been happy over having got the upper hand of some harassment, or maybe even got a court case on the go, and the victim will be having actually not a bad day, you know, just happy over that. And a frequency can be emitted at the brain, and that person's mood will just fall down to the floor. That is, of course, taking over free will. And now a victim can combat that once the victim realizes what's going on and can try to elevate his or her mood and perhaps even leave the area if that will help, though it seldom does. But to take away someone's free will, to take away their ability to have their own moods, their own thinking, and the natural way their brain would be working, I think is the most horrific crime around. I really do, Jeff.
June, are there victories for targeted individuals to share? And if so, what can others learn from them?
Absolutely, Jeff. The victories are quite numerous. Once a victim learns to adapt to this crime, learns how to thwart a lot of the harassment and the crimes, a victim can actually have a much better life, will still be a victim, but have a much better life. And I consider that a victory, because the victim was not destroyed, completely destroyed, or sent to suicide, which is another intention. So a victim actually can recover somewhat and have, you know, a decent life, still be targeted, but, you know, all hope is not lost for victims. I want to make sure the victims understand that all hope is not lost, and it can get a lot better.
Well, this book, No Ordinary Stalking, is also for non-targeted individuals to get a better understanding of what they experience and to help recognize it and not dismiss the person when they speak about their experiences, unwitting that they are a target. It takes a lot of heart and strength to push through the many layers of harassment, physical pain, and psychological stress to not only handle the gang stalking, June, but then take time and resource to support victims of the same crime. And in addition, your book No Ordinary Stalking, a look at organized stalking and electronic harassment, is helping to save lives of innocent people. Can you tell listeners how to get in touch with you and what organizations and resources are currently available?
Absolutely. All righty. Well, the support society that I direct, it's called the West Coast Society for All Victims of Organized Stalking and Electronic Harassment. You can contact me through the website, and that, of course, is westcoast-oseh.com. So that's westcoast-oseh.com. So you can certainly contact me through that, and I welcome your questions, and of course I'll support anyone that needs a hand with this crime. That includes family members or physicians. It's a support society for anyone who would like support to anything to do with this crime. There are two societies for victims of this crime that I greatly admire. One is called People Against Covert Torture and Surveillance International, and their website is PACTS, P-A-C-T-S, and then N-T-L.org, and they do it, just a bang-up job, just giving victims information and a hand and activism, just a marvelous association. And the other one I greatly admire is called Freedom for Targeted Individuals, and it is www.freedomfortargetedindividuals.org, and they're excellent as well. These groups have conference calls you can click onto them with your computer, so they don't won't cost you anything long distance, and people can phone in and ask questions about their targeting or just about the crime, or listen to a guest speaker, and they're absolutely excellent. And both those associations have conference calls. They're both in the U.S. As I said, if you click in on your computer, there's no long-distance charges. So they're very, very helpful. I always recommend those two associations to all the people that I support.
June T.I., author of the book No Ordinary Stalking, thank you so much for being on Another News.
Oh, you're welcome, Jeff. Thanks so much. Okay, bye-bye.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.